Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I used to record right here in my vehicle on my drive to work as a high school instructional coach. But now we work from home and our weekly podcasts that were Mondays have been replaced with daily podcasts while we talk about the new normal of trying to navigate life in coronavirus and teaching from home and teaching from our couches. And this week we've done a deep dive into what does it look like when we reopen schools? How can we reopen schools? What could those plans even be? So Monday was like an overview of the week. And we color-coded things for the rest of the week. Yesterday's podcast was about red level, which is not going back to schools, forget it, teach from home. Today's podcast will be about orange level, which is okay, we're going to go back, but be prepared that we're going to leave again. So orange level is like a back and forth kind of yo-yo thing. Tomorrow's podcast is devoted to the idea that maybe we will have to take half of the number or part of the students back. We'll call that like our yellow. So like our yellow considerations and our concessions that have to come with that. And then on Friday, it's green means go. The new normal is now just normal, and we're right back to school. The beauty about these things is they can change very quickly, and if it winds up changing in a positive favor, hey, here we are on Friday. What does it look like to go back to school in a life after corona? But before we get to all that stuff, some quick housekeeping notes. New podcasts every day, if you like what you're hearing. During the school year, feel free to shoot me a message on Twitter, and we can talk more about it. I'm on Twitter, at MeehanEDU. It's Meehan, like my last name, at EDU, like teaching. If you like a podcast, feel free to like or subscribe, leave a comment. It helps me get it into the hands of other teachers. And like I said, from every day I'm in the building, I'll have a podcast this year. We'll have intermittent ones through the summer as we're trying to figure out what this back to normal looks like. And we'll see. There's a lot of goods and bads about all this stuff. And I would love to hear from teachers who are doing the same thing. I don't pretend to be an expert. I am an instructional coach. I am an author, a consultant, a speaker, a presenter, and a researcher. So I do a lot of work in the space, but I don't pretend to know everything. I would love to just connect with people who know more than me. So let's do it. And then I have a website, which I have a bunch of my resources. You're welcome to grab them. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational ed adrenaline. I'm fired up to teach, and I want to help you put those resources in your classroom. So whether it's templates or resources, downloadables, click-throughs, whatever it is, take them, borrow them, use them, steal them, make awesome things. Let me know how it goes. All right, that's the end of that. So today, talked about threat level midnight yesterday, or the red level threat. Now we're talking about orange, tomorrow's yellow, and then we'll finish up this week with green. At an orange level threat, we are understanding it's good to go back. We need to see these kids. We need to kick this year off the right way. But the coronavirus has a hurricane-like effect, and it comes in waves. So when that second wall comes through and smacks us again in the fall, right in time for cold and flu season, we need to be prepared to take our teaching, and as Bane would say in the Batman movie, time to go mobile. Like, we need to be ready to go at any time to up and off and out, because that's what orange-level threat looks like. In theory, orange is better than red, right? And again, everything is hypothetical. It's better than red. Why? Well, because at least we get to see our kids and get to meet our kids and get to be face-to-face with them, even if it's only for a little bit. To do so much of the teaching job depends on the groundwork and the relationships that you're able to build with students. And that rapport is really hard to manufacture in an online space. It's not that it can't be done. We have famous, you know, stories of people who meet their long-lost love all the way across the planet, and they send, you know, emails back and forth or text messages or dating sites where they have not been in the same town or the same city for, you know, months or years. And then they keep up a great relationship or they start up a great relationship. So it's not impossible. It does, however, take a ton of time. And unlike an intimate relationship or a romantic relationship where you are trying to share personal details about yourself with the hope of making a personal relationship with someone, here, the relationship building is just part of the equation. You're doing the sharing of personal information or personal details. Oh, you have a dog? I have a dog too. Or, hey, my grandma used to live with us, and here's a picture of us growing up together. You're not just doing it for the sake of, isn't that nice, we have something in common, but rather to make points of contact and commonality so that the people in the classroom see you as people, and you remember to see them as people too, so that you can get more connection and ultimately get more productivity out of both of you. If I'm nice to my kids, they're nice to me. Teachers learn more from the teachers who they think like them. You don't have to like them. It helps to like them. But if they can walk away saying, man, that person really likes me, they're going to show up for you. When I first started my first teaching job in Prince George's County, Maryland, which is right inside of like the urban achievement gap, 87% free and reduced meals, I had 204 students, I think, 202 or 204 students on my student assigned load to me in my second year of teaching. And one of the expert tips that I got when I first started, because I knew nothing about it, like, I'm a white educator in a predominantly, almost exclusively black and Hispanic school. There were exactly two white kids in a school of over 1,000. But here I was doing the new teacher project, and I knew nothing about it. So it's like Teach for America. You go in, and you learn on the job in some really, you know, challenging school environments. They said students do not, they said students of color, which was an eye-opening thing for me. Students of color do not learn from teachers. They learn for teachers. I thought that was really eye-opening. They basically said, if the kids like you, if they enjoy you, if they appreciate you, if they respect you, then because you have done right by them, for you, as their gift to you, as their reward to you, as their response to you, you've earned their respect, and they will put that work in. It's another maxim that you've probably heard in teaching. They say that students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? And I don't think that's unique to teaching in communities of color or achievement gap high schools or rich schools, poor schools, gay schools, straight schools, black schools, white schools. I teach in a Catholic school now. I started my career in the public schools. I, in my own education, have been in these institutions left and right as an educator, as a speaker, as a consultant, as a trainer, as a PD guy. I've been at really elite private Catholic schools and these super expensive charter schools and these places that are... you pay big money and there's you live on campus, you know, like these day schools, these really high reputed schools. And I've been right there on the front lines of schools that are facing turnaround and facing achievement gap and facing the possibility of closure because of funding and because of neighborhood violence and because of bad politics. And what I found in all of this stuff is, it's out of George Koros's book, The Innovator's Mindset. You know, he says something along the lines of, 50 years ago, the three most important words in education were relationships, relationships, and relationships. And he says those are also the same most important things today, and that will be the same most important thing in 50 years. And if we don't have the relationships with our students, well, we're sunk, because they're not going to put that work in if you just are a nameless, faceless robot behind the computer who asks them to turn in assignment 4.7. That doesn't work. The challenge is how to become faceless is a lot easier if you don't have that face-to-face time. How to become a guy with a face is much easier if you start your school year off with, hey guys, welcome back, I'm Mr. Meehan. It's nice to see you. Here's a picture of my family. Blah, 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 blah. Here's some funny facts about me. These are why, for years, teachers would do stuff like put up a little bit of memorabilia in their classroom. I don't know, maybe they loved tennis. They would have a poster of their favorite tennis player. Or maybe they have a picture of their family. Or a corkboard where they have like notes from past students. Whatever it is, give that decoration a sense of home, a sense of community, a sense of purpose. And the orange threat level is great because it has that chance for us to come in and see one another as people. I had a friend who worked on a farm for much of his childhood, and he said first lesson he learned about being on a farm, it was, a poultry farm. He says that, you know, you have thousands of chickens. He's like, what you have to learn very quickly is to be dispassionate about those chickens. Don't name them, because if you name a chicken, then that chicken becomes like a person or a pet, and then it makes it harder to do what you have to do when you come by, and you have to say, okay, these five are coming over to be slaughtered. And I'm not saying we should ever slaughter anybody in the classroom. I'm saying quite the contrary. We have to name those chickens. I've made podcasts about that. I've written about that in my book. I've written about that in blogs. Name those chickens, name those chickens, name those chickens. The faster you can be humanized, the faster you can humanize, the faster you can recognize and empathize who those people are in your classroom, the better your class year will run, because you're like, oh wait, this isn't just a robot expected to give me results. This is a kid who's going through something. And what the orange classroom can do very quickly is you can just suss that out. You can feel it. This kid's body language is off. This kid's energy is weird. I got to talk to this kid to see what's going on. They're a little quiet today, or they're a little too talkative today. Or maybe they're overcompensating, or maybe they're underperforming. And whatever that is, that's strengthened by those private personal moments where you can pull a kid aside or lower down your body language so that you're squatting right beside their desk and leaning in and saying, hey, Bobby, you good today? What's going on, man? Orange level classroom allows us the chance to do that. And that's awesome. The challenge is that the orange level classroom also presupposes there will be some level of in-person, but there also will be, just kidding, peace, we're out again, because coronavirus is setting the schedule. We as a school are not. No matter how physically distanced or social distanced your classroom is, even the logistics of trying to pull that off is a nightmare. I'll put a link today in the show notes. There's a fantastic article on Medium. It's a little long. It is a think piece, so it is, you know, take with a grain of salt sort of thing. But they lay out the idea of why we can't come back to campus this semester, and they lay out what they consider the best and worst case scenario from a perspective of an educator in California. Yeah, it's great in theory for everyone to want to be back in the building to build those relationships, but what's the first thing that people do when they see each other? They want to be with each other. They want to high-five each other. They want to hug each other. They want to take a selfie with one another. They want to, you know, share the same things they were always sharing with one another. And those aren't just stories. Those are food. Those are markers. Those are laptops. Those are, you know, whatever, spit. And unfortunately, that's germs. When we're looking at germ sharing in a time of COVID, do we as educators have to compromise the ability to be that what very quickly can become nameless, faceless person behind a mask, you know, while we're all wearing our own PPE and coming through and saying 6 feet of distance, right? We're just barking orders at kids, blowing whistles and making them stay away from one another, stay off the playground. I feel like there's a scene in West Side Story where the Jets, the gang, are railing against the people who are the adults in their life who are telling them how to live their life. And they say, get off the grass, get off the playground, get off the street, get off the world. Like, we're giving them so many rules about things they're not allowed to do. Naturally, people being people are going to push back. We're telling them not allowed to have lunch like they're allowed to have lunch, not allowed to have sports, not allowed to have clubs. And if you take away all that social emotional stuff that we do just to make them feel safe and supported, it's exhausting. Is it better than online learning exclusively? Well, in some respects, maybe, because you have a little bit of FaceTime. But what makes FaceTime worth doing is that you're there with your people and you can just relax and literally breathe. If you have to be constantly aware of that, and I understand it's a new normal, fine. But you're an adult listening to this podcast. Explain that now to a child. And explain it to a child who's not your own child. It's much, much harder when you're like, hey, I haven't seen you for 6 months. My natural inclination is to run up and give you a high five or give you a hug. Or if I see a kid who's crying, if I see a kid who's breaking down, to pull that kid aside and be like, hey, are you okay? Privately, quietly. Now they have to raise their hand in front of a class and be like, excuse me, I'm having a bad day. Can I please be excused to step out in the hallway and, you know, collect myself? Like, I don't know that that's going to happen. And I'm dealing with high schoolers who have emotions that are all over the map every single day. If you have middle schoolers, you know, anything after fifth or sixth grade, no guarantees. Also, hand washing, right? Hands in noses, hands in mouths, hands on one another, hands on hair, hands on desks, eating in classrooms. Kids are very quick to figure out which teachers let them get away with stuff and which ones don't. In a time of a pandemic, if any one teacher in the building, quote, lets you get away with stuff, then everyone in the building is immediately compromised. So we have to look at all these possibilities. And this orange level, that likewise means having your curriculum ready to go in such a fashion that if you are in the building on Tuesday, you'll be teaching it personally, ready to go. If, however, you get a phone call on Monday night that says, just kidding, we're going remote, time to go mobile, and we'll be mobile for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you have to be so nimble and so quick that pretty much everything has to have some sort of remote delivery system. And that means, especially if you're working in areas where internet access could be an issue, or if students have four or five brothers or sisters at their house, maybe sharing one internet device, how do you have enough devices and guaranteed wireless access? It starts to raise some very political questions about universal internet access through the United States, or the ability to use devices or have devices afforded and provided by the schools. So what does that look like? It's really, really hard. And we all know that we spend a lot of money on our classrooms. I know my first year, I stopped counting when I got to, I think, $1,200 because I was like, that's it, just too much. And then since I started, you know, consulting and working in education and travel, like, I have to log it again. But the amount of money I spend on my classroom regularly exceeds $1,000 without even a blink at that. They say the average American teacher probably spends somewhere like $476 on their classroom for supplies. What does that look like in an era of remote learning? Because all of those handouts you would have given, now you don't have access to them. All those Legos or those blocks or those bricks or manipulatives, don't have access to those either. All those really cool web-based softwares, you can buy all you want, but if your kids can't use them because they don't have the internet at their house, here we go. So while we're just talking about red level and orange level, these are considerations that educators and lawmakers and policymakers and admin need to have. We can say, hey, look, it's better than nothing, but is it? If we do a year of education that's at this orange level, hey guys, good to see you, okay, fine, out we go. I'm wondering, on a very real level, how much real teaching is going to be able to go on? How much traction will I be able to take and get hold with if students never felt safe enough to surrender to the process in the first place. And that's a real challenge because the school doesn't work if the kids don't feel safe. If they're always under a lockdown or an air raid drill or a fear of a school shooter or a fear of a natural disaster or a fear of a pandemic, all of these things get in the way of their ability to say, okay, let's relax. Let's talk about phonics. Let's talk about math. Let's talk about science. Because they're constantly living in existential fear. How do we eliminate that? How do we minimize that? How do we let them know they're safe and supported? And does that mean, as educators, maybe we pivot what our classes offer? Maybe our English classes are not, how much of this book can you read? Rather, it's, how much of your story can you tell me? And tell me more, and tell me more, and tell me more. Because things like that, when you do this yo-yo, are very easy to pick up where we left off. That means more feedback, more focus on contact rather than content. And I don't mean contact like face-to-face, spitting your, you know, germs, anything like that. I mean human contact. Hey, I saw your thing. I really like your blog post. Your video was really important. I'd like to contact you. I'd like to set up a Zoom call. I'd like to set up another email where we can talk further. Or I'd like to do a Google Voice Hangout where I can just dial you up and let you hear that I'm thinking of you. If that's where we need to be, if that keeps our schools alive and serves a new purpose for the next 15 months, maybe that's what they need to do. And that's the beauty and the fear of what this orange level could look like. I think if we pick content as our hill to die on, we might find our schools buried very, very quickly. Because I'll be honest, I just can't imagine trying to teach, hey guys, time to learn some cursive handwriting. Like, I know it's a very antiquated thing, right? But I can't imagine, like, that's really important to learn here while people are looking at a death count climbing towards 100,000 every single day. And so I got to focus on that which I can control. And those human relationships will be critical. If the orange level affords us even a moment to get that, we need to figure out a way to maximize that. I'll link to that article in the notes today. I really appreciate you tuning in for a podcast every day this week. Like I said, they do get long sometimes because these topics just are so big. I could do like a whole book on this, but I'm not an expert and I don't pretend to be. I have ideas, hypotheses, opinions, predictions. I would love to hear yours as well. Hit me up on Twitter at @mehanedu and we'll be back again with Threat Level Yellow tomorrow. Stay safe. See you soon.